My mother wrote me last week and told me he was sick, he said with his eyes closed. It was cancer, diagnosed about a year ago, but the end came pretty fast. Man, oh man, I thought Rake would live forever. I think we all did, Neely said. His years in prison had taught him to control whatever emotions ventured his way. He swallowed hard and opened his eyes. Thanks for coming, y'all. You didn't have to. We wanted to see you, Jesse, Neely said. I think about you all the time. The great Neely Crenshaw. Long time ago, Jesse. Why don't you write me a letter? I got 18 more years here. I'll do that, Jesse. I promise. Thanks. Paul kicked the grass. Look, Jesse, there's a memorial service tomorrow at the field. Most of Rake's boys will be there, you know, to say goodbye. Mal thinks he might be able to pull some strings and get you a pass. No way, man, no way. You got a lot of friends there, Jesse. Former friends, Paul, people I've let down. They'll all point and say, look, there's Jesse Trapp. Could have been great, but got messed up on drugs, ruined his life. Learn from him, kids. Stay away from the bad stuff. No thanks. I don't want to be pointed at. Rake would want you there, Neely said. The chin dropped again and the eyes closed. A moment passed. I loved Eddie Rake like I've loved nobody else in my life. He was in court the day I got sent away. I had ruined my life, and I was humiliated over that. I had wrecked my parents, and I was sick about that. But what hurt the most was I had failed in Rake's eyes. It still hurts. Y'all can bury him without me. It's your call, Jesse, Paul said. Thanks, I'll pass. There was a long pause as all three nodded and studied the grass. Finally, Paul said, I see your mom once a week, Jesse. She's doing well. Thanks. She visits me the third Sunday of every month. You ought to drive over sometime and say hello. It's pretty lonely in here. I'll do that, Jesse. You promise? I promise. And I wish you'd think about tomorrow. I've already thought about it. I'll say a prayer for Rake. You boys can bury him. Fair enough. Jesse looked to his right. Is that Mal over there? Yeah, we rode with him. Tell him to kiss my ass. I'll do that, Jesse, Paul said, with pleasure. Thanks, boys, Jesse said. He turned and walked away. At 4 o'clock Thursday afternoon, the crowd parted at the gate to Rakefield, and the hearse backed itself into position. Its rear door was open, and 8 pallbearers formed 2 short lines and pulled out the casket. None of the 8 were former Spartans. Eddie Rake had given much thought to his final details, and he had decided not to play favorites. He selected his pallbearers from among his assistant coaches. The procession moved slowly around the track. The casket was followed by Mrs. Lila Rake, her 3 daughters and their husbands, and a handsome collection of grandchildren. Then a priest. Then the drum corps from the Spartan marching band doing a soft roll as they passed the home stands. Between the 40s on the home sideline, there was a large white tent, its poles anchored in buckets of sand to protect the sacred Bermuda of Rake Field. At the 50-yard line, at the exact spot where he had coached for so long and so well, they stopped with his casket. It was mounted on an antique Irish wake table, the property of Lila's best friend, and quickly surrounded by flowers. When the coach was properly arranged, the family gathered around the casket for a short prayer. Then they formed a receiving line. The line stretched down the track and through the gate, and the cars were bumper to bumper on the road that led to Rake Field. Neely passed the house 3 times before he was brave enough to stop. There was a rental car in the driveway. Cameron had returned. Long after dinner, he knocked on the door, almost as nervous as the first time he had done so. Then, as a 15-year-old with a new driver's permit, his parents' car, $20 in his pocket, the peach fuzz scraped off his face, he had arrived to take Cameron on their first real date, 100 years ago. Mrs. Lane opened the door, same as always, but this time she did not recognize Neely. "Good evening," she said softly. She was still beautiful, polite, refusing to age. "Mrs. Lane, it's me, Neely Crenshaw." As the words came out, she recognized him. "Why, yes, Neely, how are you?" He figured his name had been mud in the house for so long, he wasn't sure how he'd be received. But the Lanes were gracious people, slightly more educated and affluent than most in Messina. If they held a grudge, and he was certain one was being held, they wouldn't show it. Not the parents, anyway. "I'm fine," Neely said. "Would you come in?" she said, opening the door. It was a half-hearted gesture. "Sure, thanks." In the foyer, he looked around and said, "Still a beautiful home, Mrs. Lane." "Thank you, Neely. Could I get you some tea?" "No, thanks. Actually, I'm looking for Cameron. Is she here?" "She is." "I'd like to say hello." "I'm very sorry about Coach Rake, Neely. I know he meant everything to you boys." "Yes, ma'am." Neely was glancing around, listening for voices in the back of the house. "I'll find Cameron," she said, and disappeared. Neely waited and waited, and finally turned to the large oval window in the front door and watched the dark street. There was a footstep behind him, then a familiar voice. "Hello, Neely," Cameron said. He turned and they stared at each other. Words failed him for the moment, so he shrugged and finally blurted, "I was just driving by, thought I'd say hello. It's been a long time." "It has." The gravity of his mistake hit hard.